you feel that? Oh shit.
Hello and welcome back to Master Debaters Presents Was It Worth It? This is the podcast where we find out if all the so-called classic movies that people so dearly cling to are actually any good when seen through the eyes of a cynical, jaded, virgin viewer. I am that virgin. My name is Toffer. And joining me once again is the lovely Paul from the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Toffer. How are you? How is your day progressing?
I am lovely, and I'm dead glad I got through that intro without messing up.
Despite my laugh in the background making it hard for you.
Yeah, it's fine. I usually mess up the Countdown Movie. I always go movie and TV reviews. I always have to proper open up my mouth to say it.
We should just lose the movie and TV reviews and just call ourselves the Countdown. I have thought about that, but now I'm worried about name brand recognition.
No, I like it. I like that it's a long name because, you know, it's a mouthful. So, Paul.
Yes, sir.
We are in Halloween season on this show, and I wanted to get a couple of guests on, and you were the first one I went to and I asked you what your favourite horror films were.
Yes, you did.
And you hit me with a few, but one of them that jumped out, because I've wanted to see this for a while now, was Dawn of the Dead 2004. Now this is going to be interesting because you had never seen the 1978 version, had you?
No, I had, and in fact,
oh, you had,
but I've yes, but I've only seen it twice before, and I'd only seen the European cut of the film, which is we'll get into, but is a different version than the version I watched for the purposes of this episode today.
Isn't it a difficult DVD to get a hold of? Am I right in saying that?
I don't know these days, but my version I've got, which is why I couldn't watch it on DVD, is a region European, so your part of the world, region 2 disc.
Oh,
and as far as I'm aware, if it has been released in Australia, it's a really bare bones, crappy copy. So this was whiz bang, the Dario Argento cut, and which runs for, I don't know, 25 or 30 minutes longer.
Too long.
Believe it or not. Too long, yes. And I enjoyed it. And like I can, I'm jumping here a little bit. I enjoyed it a lot. Mm-hmm. But the 2004 remake is such a rarity in this day and age of so many remakes. It takes the original premise and it builds on it in a different way to make an entertaining film in its own right.
Lovely. Right then. So we'll start it like we do all the rest. The 2004 Dawn of the Dead. When did it first come into your life and what impact did it have?
I was all over this film from the moment it was announced. I didn't know Zack Snyder because he was just an advertisement director at this point.
Yeah, but this was his directorial debut, wasn't he?
That is correct. And so I followed it from sort of the early days and the internet, because the internet did exist back in 2004. Mm-hmm. The internet getting up in arms and shaking their fists and saying, how dare you remake our classic Dawn of the Dead? People just got really angry and upset. And so when I went to see it and I saw it, if not opening night and certainly opening weekend at the theater, I was a little bit like, how's this going to go? But the trailers were pretty good. And so walking in there, I was hopeful of a good film. And I have to say, I was pleasantly blown away.
Did the trailers reveal the running?
Yes. You knew they were fast on, which was another thing that really shat the purists off.
Right, I was going to say, that's going to be what pissed a lot of people off. Because I've wondered that. Like, what was the reaction? Because I'm not entirely sure, but I'm assuming this was one of the first mainstream remakes, wasn't it?
Oh, geez, now you're really testing.
Yeah, like I know a lot of the 70s films, they went through a period of remaking all the 70s films. But I think this was one of the first ones that actually went for a big film.
Well, this was, I think this is after, it might have been a Uwe Boll film came out, House of the Dead.
He's got a great name. Something along those lines. He's got a great name.
And it, you know, because it's the Uwe Boll film, it sucked. And it underperformed even by their low, low standards at the box office. Yeah. And so the distributors here, or the production company behind Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead, basically said, nah, too much money. And they slashed the budget down to about a $25, $26 million budget from recollection. And that forced a few production changes. But nevertheless, it made that money back its opening three-day weekend and went on to gross about $102 million at least states. I'm not sure that's states or international, but it certainly did well enough to set up Zack Snyder's career. though there are probably many people now who would say, bad fucking thing.
I like The Watchmen. I think that's a good film.
Oh, that's such a, as you guys often say over there, such a Marmite film. It's you love it or you hate it.
I love the book. Seems to be the case. I think the book's brilliant, and I just like the fact that some of it is shot for shot, and I like that. You can tell he's a bit of a fanboy.
Yeah, he's very, with his comic book adaptations or adaptations.
Not all of them.
Yeah, very faithful though to comic books. Yeah. But look, anyway. Not that Batman versus Superman exists in a comic book form. Yes.
Yeah, because he shits over some comic book films, Paul.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to defend Zack Snyder in terms of his last film in particular. I thought that was a big pile of steaming turd. But for this film, Dawn of the Dead, he was a fresh face.
Came
he was
out
new
swinging.
To the game. Did he ever. Mm. Just knocked it out of the park.
Okay, so what? Before we get into it properly, what... If you could say one thing about this film, what would you say is your favourite thing?
This is going to be controversial. We might lose a whole bunch of listeners on this basis, but I think my favourite thing
is just
how
baby?
Fast... No, that's not my favourite thing.
Okay.
I think just how fast-paced the film is. It is. This is a ride, this movie. It's so... Particularly compared to the original, and I don't know how much detail we want to go into about the original, but it's an entirely different film. Other than the fact the undead have risen up, they are eating people, there is chaos in the streets, and a group of characters wind up in, at least in this film, an abandoned mall and have to survive once they're holed up there. Otherwise, everything else about this movie is virtually completely fucking different.
My first note for this film is, well, these fuckers run.
Well, let's ask you then.
Go on.
You're the as you call it, the virgin viewer.
Yes.
You have come to these films having never seen them before, and here we are in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Which film was more threatening? I don't even want to say scary, unless you want to use that word. Which film did you feel there was more of a threat from the undead?
Well, the only exposure I've got to zombies before these films was Walking Dead, and I am very, very late to the Walking Dead party. Very late. Like, this last season is when I started watching it. So, like, I've always sort of ignored zombies. Like, I've never really been a zombie fan. I always thought it was a bit daft. Shaun of the Dead. I'd watch Shaun of the Dead, and that's a comedy zombie film.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
So,
yep.
What I did like about the original was there was a constant threat. Even though they were slow and they were lumbering and at times they were taking the piss out of them.
Very, very much so.
Yeah. There was a constant threat with them, like even to the point where there were kids and like they had to gun down some kids. But I did like that. I like that it was like a pack mentality. They were like, if they're together, you're fucked. But you can just run through them and just nudge them. Whereas the 2004 version, if you're a little bit slow, you're fucked. Like, whereas the original one, it takes a pack and you're in trouble.
The remake,
it only takes one. And, you know, if you're not on your game, there's no way. That one bloke at the start pretty much keeps up with her car until he sees a bit of fresh meat.
Yep, and then he gets diverted, yeah.
Yeah, so I think I'd rather live in the original one than the remake.
I agree. I think the chances of being eaten very fast in the remake are far stronger versus the first one. At least you've got a chance to... Like you say, escape, make a stand, dodge through them. You might eventually be run down or at least worn down, but they're not going to be able to catch you off their own pace. Whereas this film, that's different.
Yeah, they're just like rabid dogs. It's full on as well. Like obviously, we've mentioned the pacing, but now I'm starting to watch more 70s films because of this show. I can appreciate a film's pacing a little better.
Mm.
I never used to like John Carpenter until we started this show, and now I can appreciate the way a film develops as you're watching it instead of just being impatient. And I think that that's a big difference between the two Dawn of the Dead films. Whereas the first one, it's very slow, it's methodical. They've got patience. They live out at the mall for, I'm assuming, a lot longer than they do in the remake. And in the remake, they've got no patience and they constantly want to be moving on to the next point, even though they don't know if it's necessarily going to be safer or not. Patience is gone.
Yeah, that's a good point that almost reflecting the dead themselves, the first film is very deliberately paced, very methodical. It starts off with a bit of a bang on its limited budget.
Mm.
You get a bit of the chaos of the world through the newsroom and then...
I do love that. I think that's a great scene.
That is a really good scene. It really sets things up nicely. George Romero and his wife are in that scene. They are working the control desk.
Yeah.
So there's a nice little cameo for the two of them there. Then the second film, or the remake, is everything is, once you get to the first kill, the first little girl appearing in the room,
yeah,
it just goes hell for leather from there. And the characters in the first film, like you said, they're trying to make a home out of this mall.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's an acknowledgement that someone's going to come knocking at some point, which of course eventually does. But for now, this is as safe a place as any, and let's just make the best of it. Whereas, yeah, in the remake, they're constantly talking about, okay, where to here? What are our options? How do we get out of here? This is just a way station.
Yeah, it's just somewhere for them to be for that time. It's like, well, okay, we're moving on. We all agree that we're moving. I think maybe one or two of them say, no, we're safe. But like, because a lot of the time through the film, Modern Family is a bit of a voice of reason, ain't he? Even though he's an arsehole. Ty Burrell, is that how you say his name?
Yeah, it is Steve in the show.
Steve, yeah, it's Modern Family. Even though he's a wanker, throughout the film, I think he's the voice of reason. He's like, oh, why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? And that's what I was doing throughout the film. So like, what the fuck are you doing that for? Like, in the first one, it's quite, even though it's slower, the people that are in the situation make better decisions.
Mostly.
Yeah, for the most part. They deal with everything they need to deal with. Well, some of the times in the film, it's like, hang on. It's like when, what's his name? Peter Ken Foray? Foray?
Ken Foray, yep.
Foray, okay. He asks a dead weird question at one point, and I've got it wrote down because it struck me as a bit peculiar. When she was on about being pregnant, and he says, do you want to abort it? I know how.
Yes, he did say that. You're right.
Mate, who just knows how to abort a kid? You can do that.
You don't get to be a... Don't get to be a member of the SWAT team in the 70s without picking up a few skills along the way.
I was going to say that. Did you learn that in SWAT school? Is that like lesson three, aborting babies? What the fuck?
It really comes right after lesson four, delivering... Oh, sorry, lesson two, delivering babies.
Yeah. If you weren't there for lesson two, jump straight to lesson three. That struck me as peculiar. But other than that, they make a lot of... they make better decisions, and like, you can see all the things that George Romero was doing purposely with the consumerism. And
yeah, we are all slaves to our desires, and look at us bumbling around just for the next thing that we want. And which was a telling thing in the late 70s, I guess, whereas 2004 film has no such illusions about making a social commentary. It's just, this is an entertaining
action,
gory
film. It is more, it's a lot more of an action film, because obviously the pacing, and it doesn't give you time to sort of sit back and relax either, does he?
Not really. There's a couple of, you get the same sort of montage scene you get from the original where they're set to Richard Cheese's Down with the Sickness cover.
Oh, that's class, that is.
And apparently Zack Snyder was the only one who wanted that song choice there, so he had to fight the rest of the producers for it. So again, hats off to the first time filmmaker on that one. So yeah, you get that one scene where they're all kind of, you know, swanning about doing whatever they want to do, and Steve's banging his hot girlfriend, and everyone else is getting to know one another.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, he just bangs it out. Yeah, I forgot.
Yep. Mekhi Phifer's busy tending to his slowly turning zombie girlfriend. And yeah.
It's like, it drips with machismo, though, don't it?
Yeah, it does.
Lot of testosterone in that film.
Yeah. Which is, I don't find is necessarily a bad thing.
No, like I liked it. I liked it. And I think my favourite thing of the film was the arc of, I forgot his name.
The security guard?
Yeah.
Yes, I agree. Spot on. He's awesome. Like, he starts off as a complete asshole. CJ is the character's name. And played by Michael Kelly, who I think is on House of Cards. Not that I watched that, but...
No, me neither. I've never seen him in anything before.
So, yeah, he's starts off the complete and utter prick, and you think he's the one that's going to be the antagonist they have to deal with. It ultimately ends up being closer to being Steve. But, his time spent locked up with his cohorts is good for him, and he comes to sort of realize, well, fuck it, I'm going to throw my lot in with these folk, and he becomes quite the hero.
He does. He makes the ultimate sacrifice.
Yeah, yeah. Arguably quite needlessly, because I'm not sure why he just didn't jump out and run with them. But anyway.
Well, there's a couple of questionable things that happens in this film, Paul.
There are. I'm not going to defend it as being the most logical and realistic horror film ever made.
Okay. I'll be honest with you, mate. I'm more of a dog person than a cat person.
Okay. So are you trying to tell me that when the young girl who's lost her father and has formed an attachment with a dog, when she goes after it, It puts everybody at risk.
Yep.
That's, you would do the same thing?
I would not. I prefer dogs, but if it meant that, like, boy, still had a dog, try mate. Now, if that
shame.
But obviously they needed that to move the plot, but I couldn't give a shit. Like, nah, fuck that dog, it's gone. Fuck you, yeah. Starving mate as well. Bollocks to him.
I'm pretty sure they tried to make the connection in the script. Now, the script, by the way, written by James Gunn, who we all now know
Scooby-Doo too.
Sure, that's where we all know him from.
I have to watch that at least once a week.
Oh, God, I'm sorry. Young children, jeez, yep. Gotta love them.
Scooby-Doo 2 and Batman and Robin. Yeah.
Although I'd argue that Scooby-Doo 2 and Batman and Robin is somewhat better than having to watch Alvin and the Chipmunks on fucking repeat.
No, we've got that, but we've got the animated series that happens a lot.
Yes, that's the one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
25 episodes on Netflix here in Australia, and let me tell you, I've now got to the point where I can pretty much tell you every plot point as it happens.
Oh yeah, we have to watch that one with the robot.
Yes, oh, the robots.
Yeah, there's some tunes in that. There's some tunes in there.
Oh, there's there. Oh, my daughter and I will sing the opening theme song together.
Yeah,
some do. I'll stop now.
Fuck it up.
Anyway, yes, James Gunn wrote this. And James Gunn, if he has a skill, and he has many skills, I'm sorry, that's very derogatory. I think James Gunn is wonderful. Is he writes a really good large cast film. He'll give you just enough about all these characters. Not that you necessarily care about them, but you at least have a sense of who they are.
Yeah,
so we get one dude.
I'll pick that up. Yeah, I'll pick that up.
One dude who, the older guy, he's a gay guy, fine. He likes to try on women's shoes and whatever else. Cool. That's enough to have a sense of him.
You do you, boo-boo.
Probably the only person who misses out is Steve's girlfriend, who I'm pretty sure doesn't even get named in the movie. She's just hot blonde.
Hot blonde, yeah.
But everybody else, including, I can't remember her name now, the young girl who rushes off to Nicole.
Oh, the
who
dog
rushes
lady.
Off to chase the dog.
Yeah.
She's lost her dad, and her dad was her last surviving family member, and he gradually gives dice to the zombie virus, and Ving Rhames has to put him down.
I didn't make that connection.
Ah, okay. So that's the argument is here. That's why she over attaches to the dog, because she's lost everything else, and this is her survival / coping mechanism.
See, that's why you're good at this shit, Paul.
I've also seen it about probably 7 times more than you. So
I hadn't picked that up. Nobody ever mentions that either. So, well, not that I've seen. Well, oh, nice one, Paul. Well done, mate.
Do you remember when they had to drag her away as he's dying? No, Daddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So that's her dad dies, and yeah, the dog is the next attachment figure for her. So it's a stretch. It absolutely is. It's a bit dumb. Mm. As is the fact that they all go, all right, well, let's all charge over there as well.
Yeah.
But they do need... Yeah, they need the guns, though, and that's fair enough. So they kind of have to go on that basis anyway.
Well, that beat sort of brought me back in. Like, she ran after the dog. I was like, for fuck's sake, that's a bit daft. And even my mate Steve, he's like, whoa, that's stupid. But then they do say that, yeah, but we do need the guns. There are a lot of guns in this film as well.
Yeah, and they're all pretty good shots, too.
Yeah, like, why couldn't Starving Man have, like, blew some people up and then ran his way over?
Yeah, so Andy on the other side, that's right. I mean... If, was it CJ who knew that they could go through the sewers underneath? If he knew that and he could have told them, why couldn't Andy have made the charge across himself? But I guess the grate was in the middle of the street and there was hundreds of zombies milling about.
Mm. That was good though. I like the little connection between Andy and Marcellus Wallace. What's his name? Kenneth?
Kenneth in the movie, yeah, Ving Rhames.
That's a lovely great love story that was.
It was touching. Like, they never, and, you know, when they got to hear each other's voice, it's like, oh, man, it's just good to hear your voice.
Yeah. So, it touches the soul. It's nice to see a nice blossoming bromance.
And again, James Gunn's script is the one that brings that to the fore. So, I'd argue that there's probably 4 or 5, maybe even 6 characters in this movie that you'd legitimately like and would like to see survive. And inevitably, that's too big a number to survive a film like this. So, yeah.
Yeah, good shout. Because at the end of the film when the bus wipes one, like that was one of the things as well that bothered me. But I do understand why they did it, because obviously if you've got 2 buses, you've got a better chance than having 1 bus. But like, why couldn't they all have gone on the same bus?
Yeah, it wasn't like these buses weren't small.
Yeah, there was fucking shitloads of room, and I knew that cunt had fucking messed up with that chainsaw as well. I was like, oh, you prattin' about with that, you am. Something's going to happen with that chainsaw.
The moment you see that chainsaw. It's like, oh, that's a good idea in theory.
Yeah, but have you ever actually held a chainsaw before?
Yes, and have you tried to run it along little thin gap in a very small environment? Probably not the best plan.
No. I like that. That's good, though. It is a big ensemble cast, isn't it? And like they all, other than Sexy Blonde, they all have a moment, and it's good. Like I like, is it Michael?
That's it, Michael. That's right. It's sort of the, I guess, probably right behind Ving Rhames, the next major character.
Yeah, he's like the salesman in there. And that I enjoyed that bit a lot. They're like, well, because he's making all the decisions and he sort of put himself forward as the leader. And they're like, oh, yeah, well, what did you do? And he's like, oh, I sold beds or whatever he says.
Yeah, and I was never good at anything except being a dad.
Yeah.
Daddy. Which, again, nice little character moment.
It is. It's good. That's a good shout there. It is a lot more personal in this film. You spend more time with the others in the original, but even though there's more of a cast in the 2004 one, they feel like regular characters.
Yeah, my big complaint about the original film, and again, you got to look at it through the lens of 1978 versus the new millennium, is there's only four of the characters. Roger starts out being cool as ice and kind of goes a bit crazy, and that ultimately ends up getting him killed because he's taking all these risks left, right, and center.
Yeah, he has a lot of near misses, doesn't he, Roger?
Yeah, despite Peter saying to him again, get your shit together, get your head on the game. he doesn't, and ultimately pays the price. But Steve and Fran's relationship is really shit. Really terrible and inauthentic, and it's hard to get. Like, they don't seem like a couple at all.
No, they're shit, man, yeah.
Yeah, and I get it. Their lives are completely at risk, and the whole world has changed, but you would expect them to sort of band together a bit more, but until halfway through the film, I think he's barely touched her. Like, I mean,
he's definitely touched her because she's pregnant.
Well, yes, but I mean, on camera.
I have got that Paul.
I was going to say, they show more of them fighting than they do of them actually being close and connected.
Yeah, because she's quite a cold lady. And I know through researching the film, she made the decision for her character never to scream.
That's correct. Yeah, I found that same thing out too.
Yeah, which is fair enough because I think the 70s was like the dawn of the scream queen. Maybe that was the first one to have a female character that was like sort of standing up for herself and not screaming and running away and stuff.
Yeah, I'd have liked if that's going to be the case, then again, probably a product of the times. Yes, we can give the young woman, we can give her a small gun, but we can't give her a machine gun. And I guess the young woman can learn to fly the helicopter because we're not really going to need that to happen at any point.
Yeah, as long as she doesn't have to park it, mate, she'd be all right.
That's right. You can lift it off and park it again. Did you know in the original film, though, that it was that Romero originally wrote it to end much like, now, I need to be careful here. Have you seen the first film, Night of the Living Dead?
No, but I know it's a bit of a dark ending.
Okay. So he wrote this one to be a dark ending as well. They were all going to kill themselves. So Peter, when he goes into that room and he doesn't climb up to the roof of the shopping mall to get in the helicopter, and they start to break in, and it creates the most artificial climax in film history.
Oh, because yeah, it's like a Rocky film. It's mint.
He just kills himself at that point in the original script. And meanwhile, she gets upstairs. And now, what's the most famous kill from the first original film? Do you know what the one was that just...
Well, it's either the shotgun or it's the propeller.
Yeah, well, interesting enough, both relate. So the propeller kill was effectively put back into the script after they changed the ending because that was how she was going to kill herself, stepping into the blades of the helicopter.
Just jump off the building?
No. Got to make sure of these things.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, so, okay. So I'm going to go in, turn the propellers on, and cut my head off. Fucking hell.
Yep. So the head... or the bust that they made of her to do that shot, that was the shotgun kill.
Oh, they just later in the movie. It?
Yeah, they used that bust. Later, early in the movie, chronologically, but later in terms of shooting. So there you go.
That's radical. That's radical. I like that it ended the way it did. The sort of, because I think it reminded me heavily of like Rocky III, where he's got the gun to his head. He's like, nah, fuck this. And like you got that music, and it might as well have just been dun 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 dun. He just like kicking off. Yeah, go on, lad. I don't know how that ending would have. A lot of 70s films did this, though, didn't they? There were a lot of fucked up endings.
Yeah, and it's blamed on the time and the post of the Vietnam War, and life was a bit darker and blah, blah, blah. Although that said, we're all staring down the barrel of nuclear weapons being dropped on us at the moment. Yep. So, yeah, it was a different time from what I understand. And then the third and final film in the trilogy, Day of the Dead, which was the least successful film, but it's also the bleakest.
Oh, okay.
Without giving away anything, because arguably it doesn't end that way, but
right.
Certainly the tone of the film is just dark, 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 and there's none of this lightness that is present, especially through this film, Dawn of the Dead.
Oh, there are a lot of interesting moments in the original. It's a very chaotic film, and I like that he's gone, yeah, zombies are a constant threat, they can rip you apart. I love the practical effects. I think that's brilliant. And I know Tom Savini, you know, this was one of his earlier...
Yeah, this is the film that kind of made him. Yeah. And he apparently based a lot of his work on what he saw in the Vietnam War. So he was a photographer through the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
And he took a lot of photos of
dead
people, wounded people, horrendous injuries and the like. And that's what how he made his movement, so to speak, into special effects and the like. And of course, acting, because he's in that movie too. He plays a couple of different roles, the main one being one of the head bikie gang.
Bullies, man. Biker bullies. Ruining everybody's fun. Even bullying zombies. What are you bullying zombies for?
That's probably my second least favorite thing about this movie. Like, when I remembered it,
watching it from
13, 14 years ago, I remembered it like, oh, the last half hour is the bikie attack and it's incredible and the bikies get overrun. No, they're just dickheads.
Yeah, they are just assholes.
I couldn't imagine how this bikie gang out in the open on their motorbikes had survived that long.
No.
To get to this shopping mall and then break into it. It's like, they would all have been dead 100 times over, because every time they see a zombie, like you said, we're going to attack it with a pie. We're going to ride rings around it.
Where have they got these pies from?
What? One dude, what was he doing? He was trying to get into a photo booth, was he?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And he's trying to take photos of himself while the zombie... And I'm like, what the fuck is he thinking? That's death that's come for him.
I think there's a lot of marijuana flying around.
It's not even cocaine. Cocaine hasn't come on the scene yet, but that's what it felt like.
George Romero just went, you know what'd be dead for, Nate? Throw pies at the zombies.
Yep.
And everyone just went, yeah, right, fair enough.
It was particularly silly, and it took away a lot of what, up to that point, like you said, this film is infused with dread. They are a constant threat. They're outside. They're moaning. There's a nice little line. It's like, why are they all coming here? It's like they remember something. And the zombies in Romero's trilogy, they kind of start to learn. Like, they pick things up.
Yeah, they can use tools and shit, can't they?
Yes. They're starting to pull at doors. Like, they remember how to open doors. You know, and in fact, they do towards the end of the film when they're chasing Peter and... Is it Fran?
That's it, yeah, Fran.
Horrible feeling. It is Fran. They're chasing Peter and Fran, following Steve, to their little makeshift hideout. And he opens the door. He literally pushes the door handle and follows along. So they're presented in a far more closer to a human kind of way than they are as the animalistic sort of monsters that just charge at you in the remake.
Well, yeah, they're just rabid dogs.
Mm.
That is a question, though. If you had to survive a zombie apocalypse, would you rather it be in a world with slow but smart zombies or fast, stupid zombies?
Slow, fast. Slow and smart, because... Slow buys you all the time that you need. And doesn't matter how smart they are, they can't know where they're going once you've disappeared.
Yeah. Yeah, good shout. Good shout. What would you do in this situation? Say it all kicked off. You wake up tomorrow morning. You see the neighbor's fucking kid next door. You see it through your window, but you know that you've seen enough films. You know shit's going on. What do you do? Do you just lock your doors and stay in the house? Or do you run off?
No, I live too close to the center of the city. So it would be in car and make for the hills. As quickly as possible.
You wouldn't even swing by to pick up Wayne.
I was going to say no.
That pause will do. That's
I'd probably send him a text, a cursory text. Leave now, zombies have arrived.
Lol, zombies, smiley face.
That's right. This is for missing out Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade from your top 10 Harrison Ford films list.
It wouldn't have been in mine either. To be fair, that I'd only have two films, so.
Sorry, we're referencing my show here, The Countdown. So moving right along for your listeners who have never heard of us.
I'm sure they have. Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting thing, though, because I wouldn't know what I would do. As a kid, that's the dream, isn't it? To spend a night in a big complex, like a mall. Well, I'd love to have done that when I was a kid.
Sure.
I think I'd just lock all my doors and go, nah, I ain't going nowhere. I think I'd just shut everything and just shut myself in.
Have you the sheer weight of them, given if enough come into your backyard or your side yard? We've got glass doors here, so they're just going to push through the doors and...
Oh, yeah.
Pass.
Yeah.
They could climb up into the ceiling and live in the ceiling cavity with some supplies, a la a different zombie film, Return of the Living Dead. But again, like, all right, what kind of life is that? I'm going to live in my ceiling cavity for how long until I go insane and then climb down to be eaten?
Yeah. I don't know. Well, it's just a good question, especially for someone with a family as well. Like, if I ask one of my mates who's got no kids, like, I don't fucking care, I'll just drive off. Well, it's different, isn't it, when you've got a family? Because you've got to fucking... Oh,
for sure. You're
pain in the arse, I've got to get them in the car. I was like, oh, for fuck's sake.
That's right.
Pain in the arse getting...
My daughter will be whinging about, where's Bunny?
Yeah.
No, I don't have my favourite shoes on.
Yeah, can I take some toys with me, Dad? Oh, God, you can take one. All right, well, can I take two? No, I said one. Yeah, but I want these two. Yeah, but all right, take two then.
Too late. The zombies are surrounded the house now. Back to plan A.
Just shut up and sit down.
And we do have a pretty big island off the coast of where I live, which is about an hour by ferry.
Okay.
The problem being, but there's another island not far off it, which just has a Navy base on it. So that might be the best place to head, straight for the Navy base where they've got guns and they can clean up all the zombies that have broken out on that island. The problem being, it's also infested with snakes. So, so you take your life in your hands walking across this bloody island, apparently.
Oh, well, that's another weird thing that they do. They decide to go to an island with no information on the island. They just assume that it's safe.
Well, I don't know if they assume, as in they hope it will be safe.
Oh, maybe that's a better way of looking at it then, yeah. I think if that film was like made now in 2017, I don't think they'd stay in the mall for even half the time that they did in the 2004 one, because obviously the patients... If they had no Wi-Fi in that mall, that'd be the first place people go, to like anywhere near a decent Wi-Fi tower.
Yeah, I was going to say, you must have better mall towers or better Wi-Fi towers in your malls than we have here, because pretty much you go anywhere in Australia where it's got more than a few thousand people and nothing works for shit when it comes to the internet.
Oh, that just wouldn't happen, would it? There'd be loads of dead kids with mobile phones in their hand on the floor trying to Snapchat with zombies.
Yeah, number of fatalities from people checking their Facebook updates.
Yeah, people still find a way to rant. Even though it's a zombie apocalypse, you'd still find that one dickhead. Oh, I've had a rough day. Like, fucking shut up, mate. Shut up. So would you recommend the original to people?
Well, I recommended it to you, so I guess I better stick with my answer being yes. But you have to be able to turn your brain to 1978 or at least 70s cinema setting.
Yeah.
So if you watch this film with a modern sensibility, you're going to be disappointed. You're going to think, what the fuck is all the fuss about?
Yeah, which is, again, obviously me doing this series of films, and like, I've avoided a lot of 70s films because of obvious reasons. Because I'm not, I'd never watched them before. I think the earliest film I'd ever watched, I think, was Easy Rider, and I think that's the 60s.
Yeah, I think so, yep.
Yeah, a lot of people rim that film out and say that it's a tremendous film, but it's weird, and it's very 60s. It's one of them, you sort of had to be there, where a lot of the times with this one, I don't think I've met anybody around my age that has watched it for the first time and talked about it how people talk about it that are like a few years above me. Like,
yeah, yeah. It's the age old case of nostalgia boner. If you've grown up with something, if you watched it in those formative years, and I was older than that, which is probably why I don't have the same love for the original Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah,
and I'll get roasted for this. I actually like the remake better. Not by a lot, but overall, if I had the two sitting there and I wanted to watch one, most of the time I'm going to pick up the remake. And the hardcore horror fans will be slapping their heads and saying, fuck this guy, don't have him on anymore, Toffer. But that's just being honest.
Fuck the hardcore horror fans, right? Because the problem I find with them, especially now doing all these classic horror films, like we've done The Thing, we've done The Fly and all that sort of shit, they're very territorial.
If you go near any of their
Welcome
films,
to fandom.
Fuck. Like, I'd never had this before. Like, obviously, you get people that are arsey about certain films, and, like, cult films are usually the same. But I found with horror films, especially Halloween, I got proper battered for bitching about Halloween.
Gee, I wish I had seen those tweets. Oh, I really wish I did.
Mate. The Facebook group I was in and I posted about it, I think it got up to about 120 messages of people just calling me a fucking idiot. They don't want to be told that this film, that they probably even know the self, isn't brilliant. I'm the exact same with the 90s version of It. I know it's shit, but I'm self-aware of it. I know it's shit, but people bitch about it that watch it now. If you watch the 90s version of It now, having never have seen it before, you'll hate it and you'll go, this is fucking wank. But if you come at their film, not just one of them, they'll all jump on you.
They're hunting packs. They're like fast zombies.
It's radical. It is radical. So if I came out now and said the original Dawn of the Dead was shit.
Yeah, if you come out now and say the original Dawn of the Dead is shit, would you please mind separating me from that in the show notes?
Yeah. No, I honestly really enjoyed the 70s version. But I think if I'd have watched it last year, having not done any of the films I've already done, I don't think I would have appreciated it as much as I have now. Even though it's a weird, weird, weird film with
slapstick custard pie.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's like it doesn't know what it wants to be. But I think that's the 70s. The 70s didn't know what it wanted to be because obviously it was recovering and like nobody sort of knew the place. But that's what the original Dawn of the Dead is. It's all fucking over the place and it wants to be scary. It wants to be gory, but it also wants to be light and it wants to be funny. And it's like, well,
yeah, yeah.
Pick a lane.
My memory of the Argento cut. So what happened was,
oh yeah, you mentioned this. What?
Yeah, yeah. What's Romero was trying to raise the money to make the second film because he sort of lamented that I've made Night of the Living Dead in 1968. Mm. There's 10 years between films.
Did that do well, the original?
Yeah, it did. It was not financially. It's come a long way. It's become this huge cult hit. It's 50 years old next year. That's Jesus, and obviously we lost George Romero earlier this year as well, which is an absolute tragedy, and rest in peace. But yeah, it didn't turn into these hundreds and hundreds of different movie offers for him. He didn't become this overnight sensation, much like, say, Andy Muschietti is now for the new It film. So,
oh, yeah, fucking hell, yeah.
And, I mean, Andy Muschietti made Mama, so it wasn't like he came out of complete nowhere, but nevertheless, now he's apparently beating people off with a stick and being able to choose what he wants to do. And, of course, It Chapter 2 is on the horizon now. Mm. So he, in making Dawn, had to kind of go to some unusual lengths, and he'd formed a friendship with Dario Argento, who is, you won't have seen probably any of his films, Toffer, but he's a very famous Italian horror filmmaker, again from the late 70s and through the 80s, and he made films like Suspiria and Tenebrae and Phenomena and Opera or Terror at the Opera.
Am I right in saying the Italians are very, very strange people when it comes to horror films?
Yeah, almost as strange as the French. I think the French have got them.
Okay.
but yes, they are pretty close to second behind. So he said to George, come to Rome, basically stay with me, write this movie. I will back it to a point. And what I'd like to be able to do is take what film you make and recut it for the European audience in a way that I want it to be. And that's the deal they did.
Oh, okay. So
that's why there's this completely different cut, and there's a lot. My memory is, and I could be wrong on this because it has been about 13, 14 years since I watched that cut, but it's a much darker cut. It's much more serious in tone the whole way through.
Yeah.
It takes out those, you know, whiz bang woo sound effects and all that kind of stuff, and the goblin score or the goblin music is much more infused through the European cut.
Yeah, that's another dead weird thing about it. The music is so obtuse, but like it does match, watching it, you can see that, oh, okay, it matches the tone of the film because the film doesn't make sense, so why should the score make sense? But it jumps all over the place, doesn't it, the score? Did he completely wipe out all that and make it more of a serious horror film then?
Yes, that's my memory of it, but I'm saying that with an absolute huge amount of salt attached to it or a caveat of, that's my 13-year-ago memory. So watching this version, which is the straightforward release,
yeah,
I was kind of surprised at how wacky it got towards, especially with the biker gang at the end.
Yeah, it's like so you brought somebody in for a day and went, just do a scene, don't worry about it. put whatever you want in, I ain't bothered. And then they did it, and he watched it, he went, oh, well, that's weird. Leave it. It's fine.
Yeah, apparently there was, he famously said on at least one of the commentaries for the film, that there is no directing that many people as zombies. You just have to say, be dead, and they do their own thing, and you have to hope that one person's not standing out so much as to draw the viewer's attention away from the main actors in the middle of the screen.
Nobody's pulling the dick out.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. And the story goes that because they had to shoot at night after the mall had closed, all the way through until the morning, they would do all the prep beforehand. And so when you're making up 50 or 100 zombies, the early ones would just head off to the pub in full zombie gear.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Get on the piss and then come back for shooting that night.
Well, that explains a lot. Did fucking George go with him?
Maybe.
It is. It is a very, very, very weird film. And I think it's... I will recommend the original to people. Just sort of get the reaction, because I'd be interested to see... Like, Michael, who we do the Master Debaters podcast with, he hates most films. Like, he won't watch Halloween films. He won't watch anything that people go, oh, yeah, it's a dead good horror film. He goes, nah, I'm not watching it shit. I'd love to sit somebody like that down and go, go on, tell me what you think of this. Because I think it can fucking baffle people.
For sure, for sure. I mean, it was, for its time, it was hyper-violent. George Romero had to fight with the MPAA to not rate it X, because X films that were X in those days were just porn, hardcore porn.
Yeah, it wasn't rated, was he? It was one of the first unrated.
Well, it wasn't
films.
Rated in the end. Yeah, so he managed the victory he had was it was released to cinemas without a rating, but people under 17 weren't allowed to see it.
Okay, was it a word of mouth film then?
Yeah, I mean, it made $5 million on a $500,000 budget, give or take.
That's
so
good.
It's
shit.
The most. Yeah, it's the most profitable of the dead films.
Mm.
But again, you think about it, was 68, it was 78, and there was 85 before the next one came along. And then Land of the Dead wasn't until 2005, after the Dawn of the Dead remake, I think. Some people like Land of the Dead. I think it's not a patch on the first three films. And then after that, they just get increasingly awful.
How did the 2004... remake do? Was that, I mean, you mentioned that it made a lot of money, but was it like a really successful film?
$26 million budget, $100 million says Wikipedia return. So that's, even if you do the double it up to cover all marketing costs, it's way in the black and doing very, very well. And in fact, it did so well that Zack Snyder actually wrote a sequel.
Oh,
it was going to be called Army of the Dead. Okay. It was going to be set in Las Vegas.
Mm.
And so the claim goes from an article which I found on denofgeek.com.
Yeah.
It would have featured rapist zombies who attack human... I am quoting here. I am not making this shit up, I promise. Okay. Who attack human females in order to breed hybrid zombie offspring.
I mean, I am fucking in.
How did that film not get made? What happened?
Right, got this idea. Right. Right. You want to make zombies
scarier?
Bear
with me here.
Yeah, yeah,
bear with me. Yep.
Gonna get a bit weird.
And I'd like to introduce a Superman who's a really bit of a dick. That'll go down well as well, won't it?
he's a peculiar man. I did enjoy the cameos though. They put pretty much all the main characters into the remake, didn't they? With the same, what's his face, got to do the same line, which is a tremendous line.
Yes.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.
It is an absolute great line. In fact, it actually, now that you just triggered a real memory for me. Wow, that was a real blast. I did not see Dawn of the Dead before I saw and read some of the novelization. Because my mum or dad had the book, and I, as a 6-7 year old, I was always fascinated by this book on my mum and dad's bookshelf.
Hmm.
And I was just old enough to read, and I would look at this cover, and I always remember my mum going, no, you can't read that, you're too young. No, you can't read that, you're too young. Apparently that all changed in 1987 when I was 12 years old. No, 1986 when I was 11 years old, and I was old enough to read it.
Ha 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 It's fine.
But anyway, it was obviously many years after that I finally watched Dawn of the Dead. But yeah, that was on the front cover of the book. When there is no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth. It used to freak me the fuck out as a kid.
It's such a good quote. It's very powerful. I did like the cameos, they were brilliant. How they were weaved through the start.
Yeah, so obviously Ken Foree and then Tom Savini and Scott Reininger was the general as well. And here's one where you may not have spotted, but maybe you did in your research. One of the upscale department stores was called the Galen Ross store.
Which is Fran.
Yeah. Yee. Which is a nice little nod to her as well.
Okay, now, Paul.
Topher.
Zombie baby. What do you think?
The script's biggest misstep, in my opinion, and I know that, well, the way it's been written up is they wanted to do something different. They wanted to have something very, very memorable that had never been done in a zombie film before. And, you know, in 2004, we had our fair share of zombie films. And this is what they came up with. They stuck to their guns. It's memorable, but maybe not for the right reasons. What did you think?
Well, as soon as I sort of tweaked where they were going with it. I thought, oh, is that baby going to come blasting out of her stomach? Like, I'd watched...
like an alien.
Yeah. Like, I'd watched... It's similar things sort of happened on The Walking Dead, where Laurie was pregnant, and then she dies, and then she was obviously still pregnant. I thought, oh, is that baby going to come out? Oh, no. And it didn't. And then I watched this, and I thought, oh, is that where they've got it from? Is the baby going to come... Oh, shit, the baby's going to come out of belly. Because I can't handle that. I couldn't handle that. I ain't very good with seeing things with kids or babies anyway.
All right. So how did you go when the explosion of blood came from between her legs?
I don't like that. I don't like things like that. No. That's a special place. That's a very special place. Don't ruin things like that for me. But then I was cringing and my toes were curling. Like when he was holding the baby, I went, don't show me a dead baby. Don't you fucking dare show me a dead baby.
Well, it wasn't dead. It was undead.
Well, and then he opened his eyes and I couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah. The yellow eyes.
Yeah, and the weird little scream. But it's effective because, you know what I mean? It's, if I think about it, I can see, and it's horrible, but it's just a bit funny, ain't it? We're gonna put a zombie baby in it. Are you sure? Yeah. Zombie baby. People will love it. Have you heard about my sequel idea? No, shut up. Stop talking.
can we just stick with the zombie baby? That's better.
I like this song.
So, it's already been remade, Paul. You are a studio head. You've got to find your director, and we'll say four leads.
So we're going back to the original?
We're going
back to the original, kind of?
I need four main leads. You can make it an ensemble if you want, but I want three blokes and a woman.
Can I tell you who I'd really like to see make a zombie film? And I don't know whether it has to be slow zombies or it could be fast zombies. Probably more fast zombies if it's this man. But Neil Marshall would make an absolute incredible zombie movie. Neil Marshall did The Descent, which is a fantastic... Have you seen that one?
Nope.
Ooh, well, there's some fodder for you. It's a bit more modern than some of what you've been watching, but probably one of the best five horror films of this millennium.
Yeah.
He made another film called Doomsday and a really low-budget horror action flick called Dog Soldiers, which is...
I've seen Dog Soldiers. I've seen that one.
Okay, there you go. So if you've seen Dog Soldiers, you kind of get a sense of what I'm going for.
Yeah.
In terms of who I would cast... Gee.
Give me a black man. Give me a black man.
Does he have to... Yeah, gee.
Don't change you. Don't you fucking change you. People don't like that.
No, you want him to be a black man? Okay.
And don't say Idris Elba, because...
Yeah, well, actually... He's the closest. closest to Ken Foree working today.
He is.
If we're gonna really young him down, I would cast Michael B. Jordan in anything. To be honest,
yes, that's not a bad shout.
So that's him.
Young woman.
You
can defend herself.
Connect.
Yeah. She's got that face that you can connect with, but she can chin you if you're going about.
Scarlett Johansson.
Younger. It's Hollywood. Paul. Younger than Hollywood. Her. Paul. She's aging.
Oh, I know, but she's still. Bit of all right, isn't she? Jeez.
A bit of
you're harsh.
A bit of all right. You're a cutthroat exec.
And she can act as well. I don't know too many really young, up-and-coming actors who fit this role at the moment. I'm aging myself here a little bit.
You are. Well, we'll stick to Scott Johansson. That's fine. Give me two more quick men.
I find it. Steve is like this smarmy kind of... They call him Flyboy.
Flyboy.
He's...
Yeah.
he's quite smarmy, I found him to be, and I didn't really relate to him very well. So I'd want someone who has that kind of, I don't know, slick back side.
Snarky.
For some reason, and he's too old now, but I can see a George Clooney kind of playing that role.
Yeah, like a Ryan Gosling could play.
Ryan Gosling could get there as well.
Yeah.
I need someone who's a little bit, for Roger, we need someone who can go off the deep end convincingly at his...
Bobcat Goldthwait.
Maybe James Franco.
That's not a bad show. I'll get Sam Rockwell. Sam Rockwell in everything.
Yep, that'd work. I will happily accept that.
There you go. Because they will remake this film. They will.
Yeah, there's every chance that they will. I mean, they actually remade the third one. They've remade all three.
Oh,
the first one's been remade at least twice.
Oh, fuck.
And it could even be three times.
Yeah.
One of them was an animated one. One was Tom Savini himself directed a 1990 remake of Night of the Living Dead. It was actually all right, that one.
Okay.
From recollection.
Yeah.
Not, obviously, no one here is good. But if you were going to do watch Night, you might like to watch the 1990 version as well and see if it improves.
Okay.
Then Dawn of the Dead was remade with like Mina Suvari, and Ving Rhames was in that one too, I think. But don't quote me on that. And it was awful. It was absolute pants.
He's one of my favourite things in this film, though.
He was great.
I think he was brilliant.
We are here, obviously, talking here about the remake.
Yeah. I thought he was... He and... I like Steve.
Okay.
I thought that obviously the relationship between Kenneth and Andy, that was one of my favourite things in the film. And when they got the little messages for each other and then they're playing chess, oh, that's adorable.
And they're shooting, either writing names down of people. Oh, get into shoot Burt Reynolds.
yeah, Rosie O'Donnell. That's good. That had random scenes, but I think the random scenes in this film are obviously a lot better than the fucking pie scene.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Much better. Paul, you do out of 100 on your show, so we'll do that on this one.
We do.
Give the original a score out of 100 for me.
I'm going to go with an 82.
Really? I didn't think you'd go that high.
Hmm.
Wow, so that's four stars, isn't it?
I've got problems. It's four stars. What would you give it?
75.
Yeah, okay. That's in the ballpark. There's no getting upset about that. That's more than fair enough. What about the remake then, which I'm going to give a higher score? I'm going to give the remake an 88.
Wow, okay. Well, it is one of your favourite horror films, so I can't really be surprised. I'll give it an 82.
Okay. So we're about 6-7 points different each time, but that's okay. It sounds like, therefore, the conclusion of this episode of Was It Worth It was yes, times two.
Yeah. Yeah.
I stole your thunder there.
I'd recommend both, but I'd say people that have never seen the original will enjoy the remake a lot more. Unless you grew up with a remake, you are going to appreciate the remake a lot more than the original. It's full of action. It's like Aliens to Alien, really.
Yeah, that's not a bad comparison. It's funner. It's a lot funner film, I think.
Yeah, most definitely. And, oh, shit. I nearly fell off my bed then. That wouldn't have been very
nothing
good,
but the best here. Very professional. What was that, Toffer? Nothing. Carry on.
I wouldn't have sold it, mate. I'd have acted completely normal like nothing happened. Paul, why don't you tell people about your lovely podcast, mate?
Oh, thank you. I would love to. Myself and Wayne, my co-host, we each week talk about we try and talk about a movie that's just been released and then link thematically with a countdown of some description. And we then go back and forth 10 to 1, basically giving each other a whole boatload of shit about each other's choices and trying to sway the listening audience to one side or the other. We have a shit ton of fun doing it, and long may it continue, I hope. So yeah, you can find us on The Countdown PC on Twitter. We are on Facebook, where you can just search for The Countdown. We have a little Facebook listener community, which you're a part of, Toffer, which we greatly appreciate, where you can really weigh in and communicate with us and let us know what you think of our lists, as well as nominate your ideas for shows and lists yourself. And we host our episodes on podomatic.com, as well as, you know, we're on every podcatching app, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spreaker, and as I found out the other day, we're on Podbean, even though I never submitted our show there.
Really?
Yeah, just decided to pick it up somehow.
Random. I thought you had to submit to Podbean. That's weird. Big, maybe they're just big fans, mate.
Who knows?
Yeah, I highly, highly recommend the Countdown movie and TV reviews podcast. Oh, my voice cracked as well.
Perfect.
There. See, that's the problem.
No, that's perfect.
It's a long name, so either I get a voice crack or I get a mumble. Fucking hell, Paul.
Or you make it sound like a cow saying movie.
Movie. Do I highly recommend the podcast. And if you're listening to this now, you'll know. Paul knows your shit, so go and give it a listen.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Find this show at Was It Worth It Pod on the Twitter. Find the Master Debaters at _ Master Debaters on the Twitter. If you are an Impractical Jokers fan, you will notice we've had a few episodes with James Murray from that show, and it's getting lit. We asked him a lot of weird sex questions, and he was a team player. And he played along. So if you're a fan of the show and you want to hear him talk about weird shit, go listen to the fucking podcast.
And you host your episodes on Podomatic.com as well, right? For Was It Worth It?
Oh, shit. Yeah. This one. Yeah, we do. And anywhere else, I think. I think. I'm not really sure.
You might want to look into that.
I might do. But yeah, just, I don't know. We're on iTunes. I know. Listen to it on iTunes. If you ain't got iTunes, then I can't help you.
Fair enough.
But leave us a review. Fucking leave the show a review. I want to build them up and leave the Master Debaters a review as well. As long as they're nice. Because if they're not, then I don't want you. Yeah, next week. Oh, what's the next film we're doing? Oh, it's another horror film. It might be Poltergeist.
Nice.
Or it might be Friday the 13th. I'm not 100% sure yet.
I don't know if you're going to like Friday the 13th. I am interested to hear how you go with that one.
Well, I've watched most of Poltergeist and I didn't like that very much.
Oh, a little spoiler.
I fell asleep. So we'll see. Right. Thank you very, very, very much, Paul.
Thanks for having me back, Toffer. It's always a pleasure. Looking forward to the next one already.
You're a superstar, mate. Thank you. Bye.
See ya.